This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold, Golden, and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
Thank you, Scott Slade, and it is great to be at the Atlanta Airport today doing an Energy Matters on the road. We're going to be running into lots of folks traveling through the Atlanta airport. I'm going to have conversations about energy. And so, hey, my first victim here, Brian, welcome to Energy Matters.
Hi, thank you so much, Tim.
Hey, Brian, where are you from?
I'm from Los Angeles, California.
Well, you know, I've been asking folks all day today how they feel about energy, what their energy philosophy is. And before we got started, you mentioned to me that your dad had built some homes in California way back when and included solar. Before we jump into that, your dad was famous in his own right as a water polo player in the Olympics, right?
Yeah, he was an Olympic gold medalist in the 1956 Olympics in Helsinki, Finland.
Incredible. And your mom as well, right?
Oh, yeah. She won two gold medals in 1952, actually. 52 was Helsinki, and 56 was Melbourne, Australia. She won in the 100-meter free and the 4x100 relay.
And you went to USC in California?
That's correct. I went to USC and played basketball there.
Well, fantastic. Well, tell me about this subdivision, because your dad was way ahead of his time on this.
Yeah, it's interesting. People think of renewable energy and solar as something that just came along fairly recently, but my dad was, and I come from a real estate development family, so my dad was developing a tract housing project in the San Fernando Valley in the late 70s and actually put solar panels on all of the homes. And, you know, it's funny because he was so far ahead of his time at that point that the buyers of these homes were like, what is this? Why do we need this? This is, you know. And people really didn't get it, but it just goes to show you that developers and people were already thinking of renewable energy way back in the late 70s.
You know, I remember when President Carter, who was from Georgia, took office a little bit after your dad built those homes. He was promoting not only solar on the White House then, which, as you said, nobody really knew what this stuff was, but also some passive solar stuff where you would just heat water, say, by the sun, or you would build a house facing the sun and you would utilize the sun. But people begin to think about using the power of the sun more than they had before. And I guess it really started with architects and builders and developers like your dad.
Yeah, I mean, I think back then what they were thinking is they could... you know, it was a value proposition for the buyers. When they're selling these homes, they could say, hey, look, we put solar on here, and that's going to cut your bill way down and whatnot. And they were really, I think, thinking of it more as a marketing sales tool than as renewable energy, probably.
You know, California really is leading the way in the U.S. With solar and renewable energy, so much so that they're having to add a lot of batteries to kind of protect themselves against the intermittent nature of this. I'm seeing California regulators kind of turn against natural gas now. Y'all are closing nuclear power plants. I mean, as you know, as a citizen in California, living over near, I think you said LAX, as you think about the future of California's energy, kind of how do you see it playing out?
Well, I think, you know, it's, as everybody always talks about, it's got to be a combination of different approaches. I think solar, particularly in places like California and places that get a lot of sunlight, is obviously very viable. In fact, they recently passed a new law in California that all new homes and new apartment buildings and everything all have to have solar, which is actually very recent. And they want to make homes and buildings as self-sufficient as humanly possible. And I think that's going to really pay benefits for the environment in the long run.
And California is a little behind Hawaii on that. Hawaii was the first state to do that, but I think it's California continues to shut off things like gas and nuclear power. They've got to continue to be creative. What about decarbonizing transportation? Have you had a chance to either ride in or drive or buy an electric car yet?
Yeah, all of the above. I had, well, I don't know if you call it purely electric, but I had a Volt for a few years. I've certainly been in many Teslas and whatnot, and I think that's the wave of the future. Ultimately, I think as the technology, the battery technology and the range gets better, you're going to see, you know, the typical internal combustion engine get phased out and everything's going to go to electric. And not to mention that electric is also faster than internal, you know, combustion engine, at least, you know, off the line. So it's fun to drive, too.
You know, California for a while had allowed the Priuses, when the Priuses first came out, into your toll lanes or your high occupancy lanes as a single driver. But then you got so many of them, and I think half the Priuses in the U.S. were sold in California, you got so many that they actually kicked them out of the lanes. Do you remember when those Priuses had come out and y'all were doing the toll lanes, letting those cars in?
I certainly do, because I had one and I have the sticker as well. But, you know, I think you were absolutely right. California is the world's leading Prius buying area. There's Priuses everywhere. There's Volts, you name it, and certainly Tesla. So at some point, you know, you can't keep giving the right to the high occupancy vehicle lane to all these cars, because then it'll be completely full all the time.
And, you know, part of the rules around these, and we're experiencing this in Atlanta right now. I'm friends with Chris Tomlinson, who was running our toll authority. He told me, hey, Tim, you know, we're up against a challenge here, because we have to keep an average speed in that lane a certain amount in order to be in compliance. And so, therefore, you know, we have this dynamic pricing. So the pricing goes up to get people to get out of the lane so that they can keep the speed where it's supposed to be. And given that Georgia has about 32,000 electric cars, he does anticipate one day having to kick all those cars out of the lane. But, you know, it's going to be a challenge as we move forward. Well, good luck to you and your travels, and thank you for being on Energy Matters today.
Thanks, Tim, and keep up the good work.
Hey, it's just Tim Eccles with Energy Matters on the Road. I'm at the Atlanta Airport, and I'm with Josh from Georgia Tech. Hey, what year are you?
I'm a senior.
Have you thought or studied much about energy there at Georgia Tech?
I have, actually. I do research on carbon nanotubes, so it's like a new sort of solar cell is what we're going for.
Yeah, and where do you see solar technology going? Do you see efficiency improving with technology, or staying about the same?
I definitely think we're improving. Yeah, solar cells just a couple years ago, I think, couldn't, you know, even reach what we're at now. I think we're at like 40% transmission or something like that now, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, Georgia Tech's involved with a lot. I know they just got a new microgrid that Georgia Power's installing there. So as you think about other energy technology, are there other things that kind of excite you on the horizon?
Yeah, definitely nuclear, wind. I think hydro is really cool. Basically anything renewable, I think, is awesome.
So nuclear energy is carbon-free source. I mean, is that really a way for the U.S. to close more coal units and gas units and replace it with nuclear energy?
Yeah, I think so. Of course, there's always the concern about those people that work in the coal plants, and, you know, the turbines, right, that burn it. But yeah, I think nuclear is definitely an option for it.
Well, good luck in your studies.
Okay, thanks so much, Tim.
Hey, this is Tim Eccles with Energy Matters on the Road. I'm with Jacob. He's from Virginia. Hey, what brings you to Atlanta?
I'm picking up a relative.
Well, great. It's good to have you in our city. Hey, as you think about energy, do you have a personal energy philosophy that you feel strongly about energy?
I'd say use it. You know, when you're not using it, make sure you're taking care of it and, you know, renewing it.
Stewardship is being conservative in terms of not using more than you need?
Correct.
What about electric cars? Have you considered getting an electric car?
Well, I think electric cars, you know, the battery's got to, whatever's fueling the battery has to come from somewhere. So pollution, you know, I think it starts from the end, go to the beginning. You know, I think polluting's always going to be a thing, honestly.
And what about coal or natural gas?
I think we've used both of those for a very long time. You know, why not? Why stop?
Great. Well, good luck in picking up your folks here.
All right. Thank you.
This is Tim Eccles with Energy Matters on the Road. I'm with Jesse at the Atlanta Airport. How's it going, Jesse?
It's going good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I wanted to ask you just about your philosophy on energy. As you think, it's in the news today, lots of things like the Green New Deal floating around out there. Would you say you had a personal energy philosophy?
I wouldn't say that I have a personal energy philosophy. I mean, I have some ideas about, you know, about what energy is good for and how we should conserve it, use it, that sort of thing. But
so when you think about what's most important to you when it comes to energy, let's just say the grid in the state of Georgia, what would you say would be the top two or three things to you?
Okay, I would say maybe how we produce energy. Are we producing it in a way that, are we using resources that we're going to run out of, that sort of thing?
What about electric cars, alternative fuel vehicles like natural gas vehicles? UPS is using natural gas. They're using some EV hybrids, even liquefied natural gas. How do you feel about a non-petroleum car?
Okay, I think that would be a very nice thing if we could find a viable solution that's affordable for people, that's easy to mass produce, and actually like be able to efficiently get places, maybe even in long distances. I think that would be an excellent thing for our world. So,
have you noticed, as you've traveled around, even at your place of work, have you noticed more electric chargers?
Yes, I would say. I've just recently moved to the Atlanta area, and as I've been here, I'm noticing, like, when you go to the grocery store, for instance, you may see a few electric chargers there for people that use them. In fact, where I live in Kennesaw, you go down to a few stores, and there's just a whole bank of specifically like Tesla chargers and things like that. So you are starting to see more, but it seems still kind of like a specialty item. It's not really a commonplace thing.
So what would it take for you to get an electric car?
Okay, for it to be affordable. I would definitely do it if I could get something that could actually go a decent speed on the highway, take me a decent distance on a single charge, and have it be something that I could afford, even if it's just a little bit more than the price of a decent economy car, I think I would consider purchasing one.
And what about something like solar energy? Is that something you would consider on your home?
Yes, absolutely. And have considered it, just haven't actually pursued it. But yeah, that it would be. And now I have seen something recently. This is just kind of a random thing. I know Tesla has made like solar panels for different homes. I know they've had some issues with some of their first versions of that catching fire on people's roofs and things like that. And so I would want to see some progress on making that safe and making it work well for people. But yes, I would definitely like to have my home be have solar panels and things like that.
Great. Thanks for taking time to talk with us on Energy Matters.
Yeah, thank you.
It's Tim Eccles with Energy Matters on the road.
The electric car revolution is coming, and the choices are growing. GEM cars are everywhere. You've seen these low-speed electric vehicles on college campuses, downtown Atlanta streets, and resort islands like St. Simons and Jekyll. GEM cars are street legal, equipped with seatbelts, headlights, and a tag, and can operate on roads with speed limits of 35 miles per hour or less. If you want to know more about these electric cars and trucks, six-passenger shuttles, mobile repair service, or full vehicle wraps, go to GEMCarService.com. That's GEMCarService.com.
John, one of our sponsors for the show, Rowe Insulating Company, is doing a great job in and around Athens, being able to do a lot of what we talk about every single week on the show.
Every time it gets cold, every time it gets hot, it's always that attic that's the problem. And you could attack windows, and that's going to cost you a cold fortune. It is insulation that can solve the problem.
Hey, if you want to get this fixed, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854. Rowe Insulating Company.
Rowe.
This half hour of Energy Matters is brought to you by Arnold Golden Gregory, an AmLaw 200 law firm with 165 attorneys in Atlanta and Washington, D.C. They take a business sensibility approach when advising clients. They provide industry knowledge, attention to detail, transparency, and value to help businesses and individuals achieve their definition of success. Arnold Golden Gregory subscribes to the belief, not if, but how.
Hey, this is Tim Eccles with Energy Matters on the Road. I'm actually at the Atlanta airport in the atrium, and I'm with Rich, who lives in Hiawassee, Georgia, Towns County. How's it going, Rich?
It's going well.
What are you doing sitting here in the atrium of the airport?
I lost my flight to Chicago.
Yeah, that's no fun. Well, look, I'm talking to folks tonight about energy, about the Green New Deal. Have you heard of the Green New Deal?
I haven't.
Yeah, it's something that a New York congressman is proposing. In this Green New Deal, the congresswoman talks about, you know, eliminating nuclear energy, you know, adding solar, batteries, wind. There's a lot of different things. How would you describe your energy philosophy?
I agree with her. I don't think we should be playing with nuclear energy if we can't control it. Look at Fukushima. How much devastation do you have to have on the earth before you say enough's enough?
Yeah, so Towns County is the home of Young Harris College. There's a lot of geothermal up there that Kathy Cox, the former president, former secretary of state, put up there. If you were ranking your top energy choices from top to bottom, say your top three, what would be your top?
the cleanest. And what we have in different parts of Georgia, the TVA supports hydro energy. If you can control a body of water and generate energy from it, it's a win-win. There's nothing that's negatively impacting on the earth. And until that becomes an issue or a case, then I would revisit that. But at this point, that's the cleanest form of energy besides solar. And it's something that sustains throughout the differences in weather, sun or not, or wind for that matter.
Yeah, I have, I've hiked around some of the lakes up around Hiwassee, and I guess it's Lake Chattoog that's just bordering the fairgrounds there that comes up on that. What would be your second top choice of energy?
At this point, it'd be a toss-up between improving solar and or wind energy. You know, anything that's naturally aspirated from the earth that doesn't have a negative impact, I would definitely, increase those abilities versus anything that's negatively impacting. And I'm not a very big advocate with the whole nuclear thing because of the side effects, especially when things go wrong.
So have you had a chance in your life to experiment with any types of alternative energy or any special sustainability programs?
Not yet, but I've recently, over the past year and a half, the whole reason I went to Hiawassee is because I bought a parcel of land up on the mountain, and I'm going to take it off the grid, and that includes energy. The water's my biggest concern is because we're so high in the mountains and trying to get a well down to that source. Versus, you know, the natural waters and streams that they have up there that flow year-round. But, yeah, I'm going to take it off, and I'm going to start with solar and, you know, see how that goes. And if I need to add or implement wind energy to that, I will.
Well, great. Thanks for taking time, and good luck in your flight to Chicago.
Thank you, sir.
This is Tim Eccles with Energy Matters on the Road. I'm here in the South Terminal in Delta Baggage Claim. I've got Earl here from Florida.
Right.
And Earl, we're just doing an energy survey. How would you describe your philosophy about energy?
Well, I'm so glad that we have it. It just makes life possible as we know it.
You know, there's a lot of ideas coming out of Washington, the Green New Deal, other things like that, that would end nuclear energy, put a lot of emphasis on intermittent resources. How do you feel about intermittent energy versus, say, baseload power of like nuclear, natural gas and coal?
I think you have to look at the data, and I think nuclear has just gotten a bad name from a couple of things that really weren't as bad in overall. And so you have to focus on the data. Eventually, I think renewable, but in the meantime, the transition has to be practical.
So as we close a lot of coal units in Georgia, we're closing another 5 units next year. You got to have something that runs at night, right? And so what would be your preference for nighttime energy?
Well, I think we need to continue with natural gas. It's the cleanest of the fuels right now.
And have you had a chance to ride in an electric car, or what's your thoughts on electric transportation?
Yes, in fact, we're just purchasing a Tesla. We went for the test drive, and we thought it was fantastic.
And are you getting a Model 3 or a Model S?
We have a Model 3 on order and a Model X, the SUV, coming up in the spring.
Great. Well, thanks for being here in Atlanta, and enjoy your time.
Absolutely.
Hey, this is Commissioner Eccles with Energy Matters on the Road, and I've got Jennifer from Atlanta here in the South Terminal in the Delta Baggage Claim. How's it going, Jennifer?
Great. Ready to get home.
Well, thanks for taking a second to talk to us. As you think about energy these days, it's in the news a lot. How would you describe your personal energy philosophy?
I want to conserve energy, and I want to make sure that we're taking advantage of all the opportunities we have. For example, with gas, natural gas and propane. I feel like there's a lot of regulations going on right now, and a lot of people are misinformed about opportunities that we have there.
I was with a California commissioner not too long ago, and she said that natural gas is the new coal and really wanted to see California move away from it. Here in Georgia, I don't think our folks feel that way. It sounds like you believe natural gas is an answer to part of our energy problem.
I do, and I feel like I don't understand how they could, you know, compare it to coal, because natural gas is a very clean burning fossil fuel, and it's very much available to us in the United States. It's not something that we're relying on foreign, you know, entities for. So I think it's important that people are truly informed on all the options before government, you know, the state of California makes a decision like that.
Have you had a chance to ride in an electric car, or do you have thoughts about electric transportation?
I think it's a great idea. I haven't ridden in a total electric. I have ridden in a hybrid that does electric and gas, and I think it's a great idea. And I have noticed in the Atlanta area that there's a lot of electric outlets at some of the popular shopping areas, so people can go and charge their car. So I think it's great.
Well, thanks a lot for talking to us on Energy Matters.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Commissioner Eccles with Energy Matters on the road, and I've got Dirk and York here at the Atlanta airport. Dirk, you're from Germany. What part of Germany are you from?
Berlin.
Yeah, Berlin. I was in Berlin in May. A lot of cool things happening there as they continue to develop things over in the east.
Yeah, well, sometimes yes, sometimes no. It's somewhere in between, I would say.
Yeah. I noticed that the German car manufacturers were building a lot of electric cars now, though I don't think many Germans are buying them. What do you think about BMW, Porsche, Audi, Mercedes building electric cars instead of those fine ICE engines that they're really good at?
So I think if you want to continue living on this planet with 8 billion people, you need to change something. And this is one of the steps that has to be taken. I mean, gas prices are so high in some countries in Europe that it's now even more efficient to drive an electric car than a gas-driven car. And they only do this, the German companies only do this because they are pushed by all the Asian companies that come in. That's the main reason, because they're, I mean, the Chinese are building electric cars all over the place. There are hundreds and hundreds, 100,000 electric cars already, and we have nothing. We have the old, just the old system that is running for more than 100 years now. It's time to change something.
I mean, the Germans have the Autobahn. They like to drive fast, and they like to change gears, and electric cars don't have a transmission. So,
but they're faster.
Yeah, I guess they are almost as fast as a Porsche 911. So, yeah, York's from Atlanta. So, York, you mentioned the Formula E race, right?
Yes, Formula E.
I had a chance to go to one in Montreal, and it's the first race I was actually ever able to talk to somebody during the race.
That's true, but they're super fast. Acceleration is amazing. It's the future. Get with it.
I've had three electric cars, so you're talking to an EV evangelist, but when are you going to get an electric car?
When it becomes economically feasible. Unfortunately, that is the reality of it. As long as Teslas are $35,000 to $100,000, it is very hard to justify this at this point. So hopefully the car companies get behind it and make more affordable electric cars available to everyone.
You know that you can buy a used Nissan Leaf for around $8,000?
That is true, yes. We have a lot of Leafs in our neighborhood. So, yes, these are great cars, absolutely.
The batteries have degraded. They have a range about 70 miles. Would that work for you?
70 miles would be plenty to drive to work. It wouldn't be enough to go on vacations and road trips, but it would be good enough to go to work, absolutely.
And do you have more than one car in your family?
We do. We have two cars.
So that would actually work for you?
Yes.
How about you, Dirk? When are you going to get an electric car?
I suppose when the one that I'm having right now is not working anymore, which will be like in around 2 years maybe.
Yeah.
The problem in Germany is that we don't have really electrical, I would say gas stations, but the stations where you can charge your car. This is like something that has really to be worked on, but our government is just not doing that.
Well, thank you guys. good luck with where you're going or what you're doing. So it's good to have you on Energy Matters.
Thank you so much.
And you too, York.
Thank you.
This is Tim Echols with Energy Matters on the road.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South, the difference is good.
Creative Solar USA is a Georgia-based turnkey installer of innovative solar panel systems. They're dedicated to energy solutions for both your home and business. With their NABCEP certified installers, they ensure their clients receive the highest quality of solar energy systems in the industry. Contact CSUSA today at 770-485-7438 or go to creativesolarusa.com.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by BMW Auto Sales.
Hey, this is Commissioner Echols with Energy Matters on the road. And boy, are we ever today over in Cobb County with Thomas Vadecki. He's the superintendent for the Atlanta United Practice Facility. And so it's great to have you on Energy Matters. Hey, I had a chance to go to a game earlier this year. I had never been to a soccer game before, and I'm an NFL guy. Of course, I never played soccer as a boy, but what an exciting sport. There's a lot of folks in Atlanta excited about this team and this franchise.
For starters, you really have to go and give many thanks to our owner, Arthur Blank, and the team that he's put together. As a whole, we have an amazing fan base, and we do everything we can to keep our fans happy and engage them on day-to-day operations and everything that we do here. What we find is a lot of people like yourself are NFL fans, and so you may come to Atlanta, but you may already have a favorite team in the NFL. By having Atlanta United, we have such a large fan base here in Atlanta because most folks don't already have an MLS team that they really value, if you will. So we can actually build a culture here and include everybody, and it's been a great recipe.
There's been some cool things about all of this, from the cheap concessions at the stadium to all of the sustainability efforts, and that's where it kind of intersects with our show, Energy Matters, all the sustainability effort going on, not only at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, but here at the practice facility. Tell me a little bit about the sustainability efforts here that you're proud of.
So we are LEED Silver here. That was absolutely the goal from the get-go. There was no let's just get open and go from there. Everything was put into mind beforehand, as well as the stadium. Whereas we want continued growth and everything, we definitely wanted our baseline opening up, and then from there start setting the standards of how to lead and stay in the technology realm of things, make them more sustainable.
You know, when it comes to sustainability and getting, whether it's a LEED Silver, Gold, Platinum, certification, it requires advanced planning, and it requires somebody keeping their finger on the pulse of that, and you're the guy on that. What are some things that you're doing on a daily basis to make sure that this facility is as efficient as possible?
So we've gone the route of everything we possibly can. Not a single light in here is, everything is LED 100%. Everything is controlled via a large lighting programmer, so I can turn my lights off and only have them on when they're needed. I can dim the lights in the facility based on the kind of light of the sun outside. The water pressure to match actually our sinks have been turned down dramatically to help with the flow of water. Anything down to energy savings on my soap dispensers, if you will. Even they run very little just to keep our energy footprint down.
And you've got a lot of glass on the side of this building, but I'm sitting here with you in the conference room, and these are some pretty heavy room darkening shades, and I think that's probably important to keep the heat out of here, to keep the AC from kicking on more than it needs to. How important is your control of light in the facility in terms of efficiency?
We're very fortunate with the amount of glass that we have. I can turn the lights off at any given time and use the sun for natural lighting in here. Our main lobby, I can actually turn those lights 100% off throughout the day. You will not notice the lack of lighting in there at all because of the sun. We can actually use the lights. By no means, we're double insulated on the glass, so we have no heat loss or AC loss during the day, and we don't take any defection in of the sun coming in as well. So I'm able to maintain room temperature very, very easily and a candlelight within a room very, very easily.
As you all were building this facility, I know there's always decisions that have to be made. You know, as the contractor says, hey, are you sure you want to do this? Yes, we do want to do this. Go ahead and do it, even though it's a lot of trouble. Can you think back to when the facility was constructed, some of the challenges or some of the decisions that maybe had to be made in order to reach LEED Silver? Were there particular things that that you all knew, hey, this is going to cost us more up front, but in the end, it's going to be worth it?
Some of those things would go down just to the pure amount of HVAC units we have versus going with larger units to cool off. That would have been probably more efficient on the budget, but by going with different smaller units, I can actually take the cooling down to per room, so I can actually turn off a ton of HVAC units so that I don't have to worry about when they're not occupied in those rooms. Obviously, the amount of glass is a big issue, so we definitely had to spend the extra money on the double insulation and the surroundings for that. I would definitely say the conservation was there from the get-go as far as our trees and around. So not only conserving moving forward with energy and water, but also conserving every possible thing that we could here. That would be our trees are protected, and we've gone extraordinary lengths to make sure they stay protected.
As you think about water, which has become more and more of a valuable commodity, you've got a lot of grass here, and you obviously have to keep it pristine, you know, and in kind of I guess stadium quality. Are there groundskeeping techniques that you all use? Do you have a cistern somewhere where you collect water? How does that take place once you get out of the building?
Great question. So we actually have two 100,000 gallon cisterns that sit on well. So we use zero city water for all irrigation on property. The only city water I use is domestic for showers and so forth, but every single bit of landscaping on the property is 100% well controlled.
Wow, so it's going into the cistern, and obviously that wasn't cheap. And so are there pumps? Tell me how that water gets out of the cistern and through the irrigation system.
Absolutely. So we have two large pumps that run the entire system. Obviously, they go back and forth. They repeat back and forth to save energy as well as save life of the pumps. The city water is a backup, but we are very proud to say within the 3 years of operation, we've never once used the city water as a backup. Our system has been very reliable. The pressure is maintained very good. And obviously, Mother Nature provides plenty of water for the wells.
I know that as a sustainability geek now, I am constantly seeing things as I go out. For example, I was at a corporate headquarters of a large facility the other day, and I was in the men's restroom washing my hands. They had the electric eye on the sink, and I noticed that when I pulled my hands out, the water ran for an additional 3 seconds on each spigot. Before I started doing the stuff at the commission and this radio show, I probably wouldn't have thought anything about it. But now I'm just hypersensitive to waste and things that I see. Do you find yourself being over this facility now, being fairly critical as you go out there in the world, as you see waste? And what are some of the things you see that if you could wave a magic wand, you would fix?
I would have to default to my energy background. So being an electrician beforehand, coming to here, I'm always noticing lights. So you still see people who have a ton of T12s, for example, things that are outdated that use so much energy. And I don't think people understand that the payoff. You can swap over to LEDs and get your payoff within a couple of years, depending on the size of your facility, and maybe longer. But not only can you cut down the energy cost so much, but you can make more efficient lighting per area. You can actually impact your employees in a positive way and save a ton of money.
You know, we promote solar a lot. I had solar thermal on my house in Winterville, Georgia. I had a reporter ask me the other day, what did I think was a reasonable payback for solar. And you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, so I'm not going to tell people what their payback needs to be. My solar thermal payback was 16 years on my house. But you're saying that lighting can be paid back in 1 or 2 years. I mean, to our listeners out there, both individual and corporate, this should be the biggest no-brainer in the history of energy efficiency. Change the lighting first before you do anything, right? Is that the advice you would have to folks?
I would, as a whole. Definitely, you know, you can make a honorable argument for HVAC systems as well, but for me, I would definitely go with lighting, even in your parking lot structures or just, you know, regular parking lots. Just the simple change of LED heads from lamps and ballast style you'll become more efficient, and the maintenance is greatly decreased, and you're saving money the entire time. Your entire project could be paid off in 3 or 4 years, depending on the size of your lot, to where you're actually making the money back.
Just in our last minute, as you think about where professional sports may be going, you've got your colleagues that work with other franchises. You've got folks like our great staff down at the stadium who are taking, and I'll be down there soon for another venue, another sporting activity. I'm very proud of the things we're doing: composting, recycling of glass, building habitat homes from the sale of the aluminum that's recycled. A lot of great things. What do you see are some of the greatest opportunities for particularly sports teams and stadiums in the future?
What we understand here, and I think is being spread to our league and other leagues, is that your footprint you leave behind is just as important as your W's and your L's, your wins and your losses. How you affect the community is greatly impacted, you know, in your fan base as well. So by us going the extra mile of compost, fresh planting, and growing vegetables at the stadium, for example, things of that nature, we start setting standards, if you will. We want to be the first. We want to set the standards to make a difference, not only in Atlanta, but help spread that message out to all other areas.
Just in the last 30 seconds, leadership is important, isn't it, from on the field to the owner like Arthur Blank? I mean, he's really committed to this, isn't he?
Arthur Blank is an amazing man, and that's easy to say as my boss, but as a person, he is absolutely committed to making everything a better place for him, and that leadership flow is down from him as well. Everybody in our executive leadership team shares the same sentiments of making positive impacts on energy and the committee, and actually setting the standards and moving forward to make this place a better world.
Well, Thomas, thanks for being with us on Energy Matters. We're at Matters Radio on Twitter. I'm at Tim Eccles. We appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you so much. It's my honor.
And let's go Atlanta United. I can't wait to see what's ahead for us with this incredible franchise. I'm Tim Eccles. You've been listening to Energy Matters on the Road. Tim Eccles here for Solar Sun World. No doubt you've seen solar panels popping up all over Georgia. If you want the precision of German engineering when it comes to solar, Solar Sun World is for you. The folks there understand the complexities of solar and how to make it work, from tax credits to inverters to accelerated depreciation. They'll unpack it all. They've been in business for over 25 years. To find out more, go to solarsunworld.com. That's solarsunworld.com. Hey, it's Commissioner Tim Eccles, host of Energy Matters. I want to tell you about Kevin Rowe and Rowe Insulating Company. If you need insulation anywhere within 60 miles of Athens, Georgia, you need to call 706-795-2854. It's important, isn't it, John?
It is the most important thing you can do in your house.
It's the low-hanging fruit of everything that we talk about on Energy Matters every single week.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854. Rowe Insulating Company.
Get comfortable.
Support for Energy Matters comes from BMVW Auto Sales, the only place to get your used electric vehicle in Metro Atlanta. Mohsen and his staff will loan you an EV for 3 days to try it out, and you won't be disappointed with the deal that you get there. Check out his new solar canopy while you're there. See more at EV-hybrid.com. EV-hybrid.com.
EnergyMattersHybrid.com.
Hey, this is Commissioner Eccles with Energy Matters on the Road, and I'm in Washington, D.C. At the SEIA conference with Sean Gallagher, who works as a vice president. Sean, how's it going?
Great, thank you, Commissioner Eccles. Nice to be here.
You guys really have been the leading advocate, I think, for solar energy across the U.S., and I've known you for a number of years, really since getting into office in 2011. I'm here at your conference, and you and I are doing a session, and I wanted to just talk with you about the trends, because I'm seeing your organization message now Solar Plus. And what does that plus mean?
Well, the plus means a lot of things. I think for a lot of people, the first thing the plus means is storage. But it also means things like transmission. It means grid integration. It means working with other renewable technologies like the wind industry. It means the whole sort of renewable and clean energy ecosystem. And it comes from a recognition that if we want to grow solar energy to be 20% of the energy produced in this country by 2030, that's our goal, it's going to take a lot of other technologies to work with in order to make that a reality. Clearly, storage is first and foremost.
You know, when I got elected, one of the first things I went to was the Georgia Solar Association Christmas party in December of 2010. Even though I was a rookie, a novice, and hadn't even been sworn in, I urged the group there to learn to speak Republican, and that if we were going to move solar along in Georgia, we needed messaging that Republicans understood. Economic, jobs, grid enhancement. And we've really seen that happen through the leadership of Commissioner McDonald, myself, and our colleagues. As you look at Georgia, and you've really had the opportunity to look at all of these states, as you look at Georgia and the progress that we've made, how would you evaluate that?
Georgia's made some great progress. And I think one of the things that I'm going to probably say on stage a little later today is Georgia's become something of an unlikely leader in the solar industry. And really, it's been driven through your IRP process and through an economic process. And I think you're right that the industry has to adapt its messaging to the political realities of on the ground. You know, in California, we talk a lot about climate change, about environmental benefits. In places like Georgia and South Carolina, we talk about markets and jobs and competition. And one of the things that I think is really exciting about solar now and creates this momentum towards this solar plus decade is the economics. Solar now is competitive with the cost of conventional resources. You've seen prices on your PPAs for solar in Georgia in the $30 a megawatt hour range. When solar is clean and it's more competitive than other resources, we're really going to expand this greatly. And I think what you've done in your most recent IRP is reflective of that.
I often tell folks that our utility scale solar program below avoided cost is essentially one gigantic community solar project, because every ratepayer, whether they be rich or poor, is getting the benefit of cheap solar as it fractionally drives down rates. I mean, that's a great story.
It is a good story, although I'll take a little bit of issue with you calling utility-scale solar community solar. We do like to see what we think of as sort of developer-led community solar programs, because in addition to just having solar on the grid as a resource generally for the population, people like to see solar. People like to have it on the rooftops. People like to feel like they're doing something personal. And so I think enabling customers to sort of sign up and subscribe for a particular community solar project, as we see in places like Colorado, Minnesota, and increasingly Massachusetts, is another way to get your constituents engaged in the process. And so we do like to encourage more of that as well.
You know, speaking of Solar Plus, one of the things that I did in December of 17 is we moved Plant Vogtle forward, I tossed in a community solar array outside the gate of Plant Vogtle because I wanted people, as they drove into that plant, and frankly, hardly anybody goes that far out to get in, but I wanted them to see clean energy in Georgia is about nuclear energy plus solar. And that's kind of how we've viewed that. But we're having a difficult time getting Georgia Power customers to sign up for this community solar. Cities and communities like that Walton EMC and Monroe, Georgia cover, they're selling their community solar out. Even though they're in a very red area of our state, Georgia Power is having a difficult time explaining to people how $24.95 a month is worth it, because people don't understand they're going to get a credit back.
And have you seen other states have success with this kind of a program? And what can we do to improve the marketing?
We have seen concerns like that with sort of utility-led community solar programs, or what we sometimes call green tariff programs. I think in a lot of other states, what you see are programs that are structured to try to create, or at least create, the possibility of customer savings when they sign up for a customer community solar program. I think that, if I recall correctly, the Georgia program is probably at a slight premium to the customer's otherwise applicable tariff. And so that the question is that $25 a month going to be worth it to the customer? Because, you know, they want to go solar and they want to go green, but they also want to save money on their bills. I mean, it's still a driving force for most customers when they want to go solar, to save money, to control their bills, to have some more stability in what their bills are going to be. And so, you know, I think you might consider particularly since the cost of solar now has become so much cheaper than it was in the past, and maybe is compared to the existing resources on the system, you might consider the cost of the program and to try to deliver some customer savings through it.
I am concerned, and I do want to do something about this, and I'm just not sure where to go, because I think part of it is a marketing issue. We've got 12% of Georgia Power's customers who are on the flat bill, and they understand the flat bill. Mm-hmm. Even though a time of use rate actually would save them more money, they're on the flat bill because they understand it. And I just don't know that folks understand how a community solar project works, and we just need to do a better job of explaining that.
There's an education element to it as well, right? You do have to help people understand what the impacts are going to be, and particularly for time of use pricing. I mean, one of the things we've found in places like California, for example, which is going to mandatory time of use pricing, is we're encouraging the commission to start customers out on a what we call a kind of a mild time of use rate, where the differential between the peak and off-peak prices are sort of minimal, so that if customers don't respond initially, they're not really penalized. And then as customers gain more experience with the program, you can put them or offer to them options with with higher differentials between those peak and off-peak rates. And so customers that can respond, want to respond, do understand, can choose those programs and save the entire grid money as well as themselves.
As a conservative, as a Republican, we're slow by design. We do things incrementally. It's part of a distinctive of being a conservative. Russell Kirk, who kind of wrote the foremost book on the conservative mind back in the late 50s, talked about this distinctive of being a conservative. So I am very hesitant to do anything drastic. We have a company, Georgia Power, that's getting a lot of J.D. Power awards. We've got high customer satisfaction. There's no need to do anything radical in our state. So we have been gradually adding solar. We're going to add a few batteries on in the next few years. And I feel like we're just going to continue, as Vogtle comes online, we're just going to continue to increase the percentage of clean energy on our grid along and along. And that's why this whole Green New Deal, 12 years till, you know, the sky falls, and all of this panic messaging that I'm hearing up here in Washington, it's why it bothers me so much, because I feel that it just violates the whole incremental change that, you know, that me as a conservative stands for. I mean, you know, I'm hearing out of your event, you know, using the word climate change. I mean, clearly you're working in all states and you're concerned. But is climate change a driver for, you know, for most folks that advocate for solar?
Well, I think that for many people in the industry, environmental benefits have been a driver from the beginning. Climate change has become a much bigger and stronger rationale for people in the industry over the last several years as the sort of scale of the issue has become more clear. But I think that we still need to deliver the kinds of messaging that people in states like yours will respond to, right? So while, you know, climate change is going to be an issue for people in coastal Georgia sooner rather than later, that may not be the message that succeeds, and so we've got to learn to sort of push the messages that will succeed. And I think the message that succeeds in a place like South Carolina or Georgia is that we're going to deliver economic benefits while we also deliver environmental benefits.
The economic benefits is something that we're still, as Republicans, messaging out there and trying to convince our colleagues that, yes, it really does save money. It really does produce jobs. And I think when we approved that initial 525 megawatts in 2013, that you'll remember that it was the motion heard around, you know, certainly around the Southeast, as Commissioner McDonald did that and Doug seconded it and I voted for it. We got a lot of pushback. We got some cover from the Green Tea Party, but it has turned out to be a good thing. And I think now many of our Republican colleagues believe that it was the, you know, the best way forward. Do you anticipate seeing a lot of additional solar just here in the last 30 seconds in the U.S.?
Absolutely. We see very strong growth over the next couple of years as the sort of effect of the tariffs wanes a little bit, as the costs continue to come down. We're expecting to see 14 or so gigawatts come online this year, 16, 18 gigawatts come on next year, and then the growth is going to continue very strongly through the 2020s.
Well, we love Twitter on Energy Matters. We're at Matters Radio. I'm at Tim Echols. What's your Twitter handle?
It's at @SG_SIA.
And how about the organization? What's their Twitter handle?
Twitter handle for SIA is @SIA, @SEIA. Please follow us.
Well, it's been great being here with you in Washington. Thanks for being a guest on the show today.
Thanks very much, Tim.
Well, you've been listening to Energy Matters, and energy does matter, and we talk about it every week on our show. Check us out at Matters Radio. I'm at Tim Echols. Thanks for being a part of our show today. Hope you have a fantastic rest of the day. You're listening to Energy Matters.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Echols and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.